presents
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Downcast Wednesday, everybody. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, the news yesterday that Doc Richardson, was taken by complications, COVID, and further issues that were compounded, clearly, by COVID here in Saratoga. And I'll start out by saying I only personally knew him to nod and say hi, Doc, wherever I saw him, and I saw him everywhere. You saw him everywhere at Saratoga all summer long. Just a constant presence for years, for decades. Back in Kentucky, back at Churchill, back at anywhere, everywhere. Keeneland, wherever you went in this game, the last literally 50 years, you were in constant presence of Dr. Richardson and the industry was. Something he was so devoted to in so many capacities, and any time called upon in any arena, Toba particularly, but a jockey club member and on countless boards. Multiple appointments and service to the KHRC, to the KTA and the Development Fund and you name it. Toba in particular, and he probably at one time or another served on every steering committee, and of course the graded stakes committee, and everything that Toba's involved in. There is no area, backstretch communities, encouragement of education for anybody. Anybody within reach, anybody involved tangentially to the game and to the industry. It's so easy, of course, to say, we'll be missed and we'll impossible to replace. When you want to identify, frankly, if you took, I would think, a survey, he would come up as the most admired, appreciated, liked individual in the game. The sadness involving this passing is really profound and sincere, because there isn't anybody, particularly not confined just to Kentucky, but you know, particularly, of course, in Kentucky. And I'm doing a disservice because I don't know the, you know, the medical community and the, you know, the teaching hospital scenario that you know, he has been involved in his whole career. His story alone, forget what he's contributed, his story is unbelievable. I mean, coming out of Eastern Kentucky and becoming a incredibly accomplished surgeon, and then essentially being equally captivated and immersed in the business and in the game. I mean, he seemed to love everything about, I'm sure he loved everything about medicine and that part of it and you know, the teaching, but, you know, for particularly for our discussion, and we'll have at least two today. We've got kind of a locked in schedule, but I this first hour, I'm hard pressed not to devote to appreciating and paying tribute to Doc Richardson. And I'm sure other people, I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to be in Kentucky, of course, later tonight and at Kentucky Downs tomorrow and Friday. Hammer, I'm sure tomorrow when Hammer sits in. Graded State Committee and all the meetings that they have and all, you know, telephone conferences and face-to-face meetings. Hammer will have his appreciation for Doc. Dan Metzger is going to join us first and you know, start things in, in 10 minutes, give or take. But I just, I saw the alert, and or I think I saw it on Twitter first, and you know, I had to read it two or three times just to absorb what I was not on track every day this summer, obviously, but every day I was, and you go circulate around the racetrack, and that includes passing, you know, through the boxes, and there's Doc Richardson because he's always there. I suppose the Mount Rushmore of the Saratoga boxes, Doc Richardson and Peggy Steinman. there's two. I'll think up two more. But this is so sad that it you can't do it. You cannot do it justice. I mean, when you see the kinds of comments, when you see heartbroken and devastated, that's uniform. And the worst part is that everybody, you know, that passed through Saratoga this summer, they spent time, like they always would, whether it was in the mornings or in the afternoons or, you know, dinners and whatever, you know, all the things that are so essential to what Saratoga is. And the fact that this comes here at, you know, as a taking COTA, you know, to what had been a wonderful and magical summer. I mean, that's been the definition, essentially, of what we enjoyed here this summer. It really brings a sad end. To the season, and like there is, like there's been for others that there were twists and turns, there were moments even as recently as late last week where over the weekend it seemed like he was he was getting better, and then just that quickly. He's gone. I'm going to let. I mean, like I tried to say here. I only, had a passing, nodding relationship. So we'll start with Dan in just a couple of minutes to pay tribute to Dr. David Richardson, Doc Richardson, and take your take a moment today when you see the links. DRF Matt Hegarty wrote the obit, and Frank Angst at Blood Horse, and at TDN, and I haven't even looked in the CJ and Herald Leader, and I am talking about his medical prowess and decorated career as a as a teaching surgeon and as his presence as a racing official, but we also have to acknowledge his devotion as a breeder and as a horseman. It really cultivated a knowledge about the breeding. I mean, he obviously. I mean, and I'm feeling terrible that I didn't avail myself of him as a guest and just to talk to more, because he's one of these exceptional people you come across who. When they don't just have a passing interest in something, they have a passion about it, and devote themselves to being as successful and as knowledgeable as possible, and maybe this was the industry was a perfect. Impossibly deep mine of knowledge and information that maybe that's what kept him so captivated and so devoted to it. So I'm doing my best to express what kind of an individual the Doc Richardson was and how thoroughly impossible it's going to be to replace him. He's somebody that was sought out for advice and that the industry could turn to, that people at all levels. That's one of the things about him, because he was, it was obvious that he was comfortable with all walks of life and all all the various levels of kinds of people that are in the game and around the game. So we'll have Dan Metzger shortly, and we'll start Bill Landis is going to join us as well at Hermitage, and I imagine it's going to be not going to be easy. I've asked Bill Mott. He was best man at Bill Mott's wedding, and was a regular presence at the Mott encampment up here. And although I never go to Payson Park, I'm sure at Payson Park too. And the suddenness of this, people knew that he was not well over these past 2 weeks, but this felt sudden and shocking. We also, of course, have to look toward what's going to happen this afternoon on the racetracks, and it will be a good race day. And in fact, it's more than a good race day. Between Kentucky Downs later and Indiana Grand, we'll talk to Bill Downs in hour two. They've got a nice partial stake slate, and of course, you listening to the replay, you probably heard Jeff Mede from Canterbury. They've got their late afternoon, evening Minnesota Champions action as well. So there's probably a dozen stakes today on a Wednesday. The game goes forth. Nothing stops it. Sid Fernando is going to join us as well. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and as mentioned, as we've touched on the weekend, holiday weekend racing, very good weekend for Hill and Dale, for Curlin and more. So we'll talk to Sid, and we'll talk about some of the 2-year-old winners and some of the. I don't know if you saw Arrogate with his first two winners within 20 minutes of each other. Was that Sunday or Monday? I did notice that Ed DeRosa should do publicity for Stallions, because literally minutes after he said Arrogate's 0-for-12, he probably had two winners. So Ed put Arrogate right into the win column. I'm not sure between the unbridled song portion of the equation and the fact that he was a classic distance horse, that didn't start his career until he was three. I'm not sure who thought Arrogate was going to be super precocious with his progeny, because that was going to be a long shot, I think, right? Yeah, that's what I thought. Anyway, we'll talk to Sid. And then in hour three, I've got to head to the airport. And so in hour three, Jerry Brown. And Jerry and I sat down with Jerry Brown. We didn't sit down. We did it by phone. No matter how I tried to get Jerry to sit face to face, we ended up doing it on the phone. We had a wonderful hour long conversation, and as I mentioned yesterday, the focal point had been the new Jockey Club initiative involving what they termed an exceptional performance evaluation tool, utilizing Thoroughgraph. I think as long ago as 5 years ago, this came up with Jerry, that he had worked with, approached and had been approached either way by the Jockey Club, and introduced the concept to them of utilizing performance figures to spot trends and aberrant performance. And as part of the Jockey Club Roundtable, one of the you know, one of the really encouraging portions of this year's roundtable was this news that, you know, working with McKinsey, that they had created this, you know, that using a set of algorithms, and, you know, they're not just looking for isolated, oh, that horse was a jump up. They're not doing, that's not what it's about. It's much more involved than that. It's looking for, you know, multiple horses from, potentially from individual barns. And so Jerry talks about the development of it and the work that was done from his end. And yeah, then we talk some general themes on that front, on performance enhancement and, you know, attempts to cheat. And then it actually goes into a couple of other areas. The Jerry triggered a question from me that then proceeded to go another, I don't know, it's an hour. It basically will be the whole third hour. So, you know, one of the really smart people and great characters in the game as well. So hour three today, Jerry Brown of Thorograph, talking issues of the day. The saddest possible issue of the day yesterday was the news, as I've introduced this morning, of the just I want to say impossible and inconceivable death of Dr. David Richardson. And the show that I could do 3 hours today, tomorrow, Friday, and into next week, talking and just having people come forward to, you know, talk how much Doc Richardson meant to them professionally and personally. And our first is Dan Metzger of TOBA, who's worked alongside Doc for, I don't even know how many years, Dan. As long as I know you, you're involved with TOBA. And as long as I know him, he knew of him, has been involved in TOBA. I can't tell you, trying to speak for horse players and fans and, you know, anybody who may have known of and Doc Richardson, I pass along our deepest sympathies.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate the opportunity to be on this morning. And yeah, it was a difficult day yesterday. And you know, Doc Richardson, you know, and a lot of people called him Doc, and I usually just called him Dr. Dave. And he was it was a privilege for me to call him not only my boss and a mentor, and I've had some great mentors in my life, Ted Bassett, Kay Wood Ledford, and Doc Richardson, Dr. Day would be up there at the top of the list. But most importantly, he was a great friend as well, and his loss is will be felt. He's an amazing man that touched the lives of so many people. And, you know, a lot of people outside the industry who just follow the industry casually may not know of Dave, but those in the industry, from Hall of Fame trainers to major owners and movers and shakers in this industry to grooms and hot walkers and farm workers, they all knew Dave and his generosity and his kindness. And it's going to be a difficult next couple of weeks, but we'll be also celebrating Dave's life because he gave so much, not only to the thoroughbred industry and to the medical community, but also just, you know, to the world.
Talk about the professional. I'm going to try to, you know, reach individuals from every area. And in terms of being a racing official and you know, having a role in, you know, the administration of the sport, it certainly felt like he was sought after, and this is not limited just to, you know, the administration of the sport. It seems like he was a go-to for countless people that just sought his you know, his counsel, but talk to his work, specifically at TOBA.
Yeah, at TOBA, I first met Dave. I probably knew Dave a little bit just to say hi to in the 90s. Before I came to TOBA, I used to work at the Breeders' Cup, and actually Dave taught my brother and sister-in-law in med school 40 years ago at the University of Louisville, and he's taught a lot of my friends and people that I know in the medical field. And Dave, since I've been at TOBA for 22 years, and he's been on the board, he's rotated off a few times, but he's been on the board quite a bit because he's a guy you wanted in the room. Dave brought the voice of reason. He brought the perspective. You know, not only as an owner and a breeder, and he served on the Kentucky Racing Commission. Dave also loved, he was a horse player. Loved to play the game. And, you know, he got involved with TOBA. He was on our board. And then probably about 10, 12 years ago, he got even more involved when he joined the Graded Stakes Committee. I still remember like it was yesterday. We had a vacancy on the American Graded Stakes Committee up in Saratoga Springs, and I believe Reynolds Bell was our chairman at the time, and announced that we had a vacancy, and we would, if anyone was interested, you know, please let us know. And Dave came up to me after the meeting and said he'd be honored if we would consider him. And that's Dave's involvement with TOBA was always involved, but it really took off after that. And I think a couple of years later, he became chairman of the Graded Stakes Committee, which is a thankless task to be not only on that committee, but to be chairman of it. It's an amazing committee that I don't think the public recognizes the work they do. And Dave shepherded us through some tough times with the Graded Stakes on some different areas with medication. But then he became vice chairman of TOBA, and then he became chairman of TOBA from 2015 through 2019. And he's just been an invaluable resource to this organization, and in terms of just, you know, how well-versed he was in understanding all aspects of the game from the regulatory end, which is so important. From the organizational end, Dave served on the board of the Breeders' Cup for a number of years. He was also the head of the Kentucky Thoroughbred Association for a number of years. He's just, you know, the loss is significant, but his steady leadership when waters are very choppy, you know, really has helped this organization so many times. And I think his wisdom he has passed on to hopefully myself and to others as well as we continue what we do here at TOBA, and hopefully, you know, continue the legacy that Dave left us with.
Well, nicely put. Dan, it's amazing when, you know, when you hear the variety of you know, the points on the compass that come forward in a circumstance like this, and you almost marvel or wonder, you know, how he was able to spread his time to all these different areas, because you know, we're just talking about his contributions to the sport. Then there's the medical community, involving, you know, Louisville and the university, and what obviously was the full-time profession. It just seems like one of these people that made time for everyone and did it, you know, so seemingly effortless. He had a. I'm not surprised to hear you say about, you know, him shepherding things through choppy waters, because he had a very calming way about him. There was a real placidity to him.
No, he did, and not only was he the vice chair of surgery at the University of Louisville. And I know for years he taught at the U of L Medical School. He was also several times chairman and president of the American College of Surgeons, which is a national organization.
Unbelievable.
And Dave, and I don't think I'm telling any secrets, by his own admission, didn't sleep well. You know, I think he probably got 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night. used to tell us he used to watch racing from home, Hong Kong, from Australia at night, when everybody else was asleep. And, it's remarkable when you think, as you pointed out, his involvement in full-time job at the University of Louisville and his volunteer work through the American College of Surgeons, but also, all these organizations, TOBA, KTA, Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, Breeders' Cup, different advisory committees. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And he was just, I'd like to say he couldn't say no, but he may have said no a few times to people, but I'm not aware of those. And I think when Dave felt strongly about a cause or an organization's mission, he was behind you and 100%, and that was so important to us.
One aspect, and we're going to talk to Bill Landis next, but I was sort of taken aback that he had as many as 40 horses right now recently in various states of training or in service on the farm. That's a considerable undertaking in itself.
Correct. And someone sent me a video yesterday of Dave speaking at a medical convention 3 years ago, and I forwarded it to some of our board members, and as one of them said to me in response, thanks, this made a very difficult day a little bit easier just to be able to watch Dave in that 13-14 minute speech. And Dave said, I'm not wealthy, and compared to some people he probably wasn't, but to have 40 horses regardless shows the absolute commitment and love Dave had for the sport. And I think when he bought his first horse, when he was like maybe 30 years old, he said he had no money and he had to borrow the money. And he said he had a very understanding wife. But he says the last time he borrowed money to buy horses, and Bill probably could tell you a lot more than I could on that. Bill goes back with Dave many, many more years than I do. But, if Dave could have written a book about his life in thoroughbred racing and the great behind-the-scenes stories, it would have been a bestseller. I mean, Dave knew everybody, knew the stories. He had a great sense of humor. He could jab people in a good, light-spirited way, never mean-spirited, have fun. And just to be able to, with them, which I was a few weeks ago, last time I saw him in Saratoga after our board meeting, down at the Oklahoma track outside of Vilmont and Christoph Clement's barn with, Dave's what I would call his posse, the group that, they went to the track almost every morning. Brant Lauer, Toba Chairman, Louis Chaffelle, Dick Knapp, Everett Dobson. Those memories will stay with me for the rest of my life.
There's a who's who. His presence here, I talked about that a little bit ago. I said that he at Saratoga he'd have to be on the the box seat Mount Rushmore. I've got him and Peggy Steinman so far. I've got to figure out who the other two would be.
Yeah, when you walk through the, Dave was, some people would call him the mayor of the backstretch and the mayor of the box area. And whether it was at Churchill Downs or Saratoga, probably two, don't want to speak for him, but I know two places that he probably cherished as much as any place else. It's just amazing the people that gravitated toward him, wanted to speak to him, and the humility that he showed and the kindness to people and the patience that he showed. It's just, something, I tried to learn from Dave. And, I saw him for the first time in about a year at the Derby, with the pandemic. And Andy Schweigert, who works with us here at Toba, who's the secretary of the American Graded Stakes Committee, Andy and I would every year for a number of years make a trip. We'd go to the Derby, but we'd go, a Derby morning, Wednesday or Thursday, just to hang with Dave. And to walk with him, and everybody knew him. And it was just, you know, it was just a neat, neat feeling that I'll deeply miss.
Well, and that, yeah, when you have someone, and there's, you know, there's individuals in this realm, in all regions where racing operates, but you hit that perfectly, Dan, about, you know, sort of the touchstones that, you know, that make the traditions and the seasons at racetracks, you know, special and familiar and so treasured. And that includes, you know, seeing certain people that, you know, you only see at that time, whether it's at Saratoga or at Keeneland or at Derby or at, you know, in Florida in the winters or Oaklawn, you know, Del Mar, whatever it is. It's part of, you know, a real part of the texture that makes the game so attractive. And he... You know, he was one of those people, and I, you know, not that I had the kind of relationship that, you know, that our guests will have today with him, but I, you know, I always knew there he was, it'll be an absence, and then in all these other service capacities, a very difficult. I mean, you get people that will serve in those capacities, but. To have somebody with you know, the gravitas and experience and all those elements that you know, made him invaluable and I'm going to guess irreplaceable.
Yeah, that's the word I had. He's irreplaceable, both as a friend and as a colleague, and but just the important role he played not only here at Toba but with so many other organizations and so many other people's lives. And he's just, you know, one of a kind, and, you know, we've all been, I think, blessed and privileged to be associated with Dr. Richardson. I mean, he's, you know, he was literally one of the all-time greats. He is and was one of the all-time greats.
Well, there'll be undoubtedly tributes and things... named in his honor and in his memory to come. And Dan, I appreciate the chance to have you, you know, lead off the tributes, represent Toba and you know, the service side of Doc Richardson's life around the game.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, and it was a privilege to be on this morning, and a privilege to work with Dr. Dave, and hopefully here in the next few weeks we'll be able to, you know, get past this mourning period and be able to celebrate a life of a great man. Thank you.
Well said. Thanks very much, Dan Metzger, everybody, as we pay tribute to Dr. Richardson. And I mentioned I was going to try to flesh this out as best that we could, but you know, this is a personality that that was both physically imposing and actual presence, yeah, an accomplishment on the horsemanship side. Clearly, Dr. Richardson had really cultivated the interest and his knowledge. And Bill Landis joins us now to talk about that side of it. Bill, I'm so sorry about Doc.
Well, I counted up last night, and I had 77 texts, and I probably had another 30 phone calls. In condolence yesterday, and speaking to the greatness of the man. And my daughter did some research for a friend of hers over the weekend about Rosh Hashanah and the meaning of it. And the bottom line of it was... the Lord saved the best to pass in the time right before the new year, because they were needed and they were the most righteous.
Hmm.
And boy, that really spoke. And I've shared it with wife Maxine, daughter Amy, and his family, and I hope they find some comfort in that. I do. It's helping me get through. It's tough. I first ran into David in about 1980-1981 here at Hermitage, and we had a very successful team by the name of Roger Baba. He was leading sire in America twice, leading sire of two-year-olds. And Roger Baba was experiencing some fertility problems. And hormone therapy was prescribed for him, and it was to be administered by a pump. And Mr. Jones, who was the most aggressive horse person that I've ever run into, probably ever will run into, found out about the pump and knew of two local physicians, surgeons, that were interested in the horse business, Dr. Hiram Polk and Dr. J. David Richardson. I'll never forget, on a winter's night, the pump came in, the hormone came in, sitting in Mr. Jones's office. Mr. Jones was in Florida sitting there and watching these two world-renowned surgeons trying to figure out how this pump worked. And that was the first night that I met Dave. And I'll never forget that. I don't know exactly what we accomplished with Roger Baba's fertility, but he was a boarder and a friend ever since those days in the early 80s. And with Dave, family always came first. You know, he's got two grandchildren. One is named Charlie, and that is after Indian Charlie, and I mean the real Indian Charlie, who is a clocker on the backside of Churchill Downs and a great friend and pal of David's. And the other, a granddaughter's named Evelyn, for Evelyn Courtney, Bob Courtney's wife. He thinks so much of his family, and that always came first. On trips to Lexington, you never knew. One might be a call from Metzger. One might be a call from the Blood Horse. Well, definitely a call from Dr. Amy Surfoss, his daughter. You could book it, but you never knew what you were going to get into or what he'd be talking about on his cell phone. We would take trips to look at stallions or go to sales or something like that. But I'll tell you, he was a contrarian too. You need to know that. He was a debater. He was a debater in college and in high school, and he was very comfortable taking. He was a gun for hire. He could take any side that he wanted or you wanted him to. And being a retired lawyer myself, he and I would occasionally get into it. And usually he would get the best of me, but it was always great fun when I ended up on top. I'll tell you, Steve, the other thing that I wrote to the KTA directors, KTOB directors yesterday, what he was is he was a promoter. He would identify you or a person as a talent, and he would promote them into a position where they could flourish. And then he would stand back or sit back in the corner and watch you flourish, and watch you do good, and never expect any repayment or credit for what he's done. And Dan is a beneficiary of that. God knows I'm a beneficiary of that. Tommy, I would venture to say trainer Tommy Drury's a beneficiary of that. Trainer Brett Brickman, who won the big stake, and Brett just told me yesterday, he got a text from David after they won the stake this past weekend, and he had horses with Brett, and always promoting people, and I'm so appreciative. He only took two terms as a KTA president. You're never supposed to have more than one, but we had a vacancy, so he said, he told Dave Schweitzer, yeah, I'll come back. God, what a brute. Jeez.
He did. Dan Metzger just earlier, Bill, said he he imagines that he did have to say no to some people at certain times, but that he had never actually encountered it.
Well, we had good times too, Steve. I mean, this is really hard for me, but I'm reflecting on the good and laughing times. People that know me know that I'm like the Joker in the deck of cards. If I can't make fun or laugh over something or poke fun at you, I'm not a happy man. And I was just reading in an article about him yesterday, and he and I would talk about it, but I never got the details that in high school he was a percussionist. He was a drummer. That is, until he got into a physical fight with the band director. And Dan will tell you this. I always accused him and told Maxine, his wife, I said, now don't you let David go Moorhead on you. And that would always bring him, that was always my great equalizer. Whenever he was on a roll, I would pull the Moorhead card and bring him back to Earth, which was my, believe me, that was my greatest fun. And I'm going to miss that. And I'm going to miss him. I just bolted upright. And Dan says 40 horses. I'm going to inventory the horses beginning today for him. I'll guarantee you we're gonna beat 40.
Hey, talk about his learning curve, because if your relationship with him started in 1980, that pretty well corresponds with, you know, his origins from the breeding side. And when you talk about Dr. Polk, you know, they were partners on a lot of good horses, and I know that Dr. Polk shows up as the listed breeder on Mrs. Revere, for instance, probably the name that, you know, the biggest name that people might know immediately. But talk about his learning curve, because it did seem like he had just a voracious appetite to learn and to become accomplished at everything he did.
Oh, no, he had a head start. When I met him in the early 80s, he had a head start. He had already owned stake winners and raced horses. So he knew the backside and the racing angle. I mean, he was ahead of the game. And maybe they had just begun breeding at that time, but he had countless stories about how Mrs. Revere was, how she came about, and the good daughter, or probably the best daughter or best horse by Silver Series, and how all that happened. But his relationship with his, it's hard to flesh out his family relationship with Woody Stevens, but boy, you think that didn't carry. And then Woody introduced him. David could relate to both the mighty and the lesser. I mean, and that was, believe me, if he had any attribute, that was preeminent. I mean, he, at home at the Jockey Club, but happy with the night watchman at Pin Oak Stud, whose life he saved. God, you can't count on the number of people who medically he intervened with and saved their lives or turned their lives around or really helped them and what he did for them. But, I had very little to do with the learning curve. As a matter of fact, it would be point counterpoint when we talked about stallions or horses or whatnot. And we had a conversation just within the past 2 weeks about a stallion that's gone to stud and taking the point counterpoint. Again, it goes back to those debating days, I guess. But he's very opinionated, had a strong sense. He also had a connection, Steve, that needs to be fleshed out with Henry Fiatkowski and Woody in picking out some of those, around with Woody, picking out some of the horses that ended up being part of Fiatkowski's, you know, great broodmare band and empire.
And I saw one reference, in fact, to... I suppose that was probably pre-Calumet, before
yeah
he stepped in.
Yeah, I mean, he would talk about looking at Well, I mean, he just told me many stories about seeing Danzig at the sales, seeing and the work he did to sell Seth on standing Danzig, and De La Rose, who we would talk about, all those good horses of Fiatkowski's, where he saw them, and which was usually either Keeneland July or Saratoga, and what their attributes were. He knew what he liked, well, as we all do in the horse business. But, again, touching the mighty and touching the lesser is something, you know, don't get above your raisin, as the old song goes, you know, and he never did. Very fond of his mother made him memorize Bible verses, his dad made him work hard. So that's what I'll always cherish about him, his background, and very good to me and my family, and very good friends. Suzanne's loss, his first wife's loss, was tragic. He went through a hard time there, but God bless Maxine Rogers, who he knew and came along and really recharged his battery. And such a good, loving couple. And I feel for Maxine. Maxine's been through a lot the past 2 or 3 weeks, and she needs all our prayers and support that we can give her.
Bill Landis with us from Hermitage, and as you can tell, you know, one of the real close associates and friends of Dave Richardson, and you know, you bring up his first wife, I think she also died in Saratoga too.
Yeah, that's the curse. Amy, when Amy was traveling back to Saratoga, she said, "I can't let this happen again." But you know how life is. It's not fair, and that's Amy's burden.
As I said to Dan Metzger, Bill, not somebody. There will be people that will fill roles, but they won't replace Doc Richardson.
Oh my God! I mean, he got me on the KTDF advisory committee, of which then he bowed out and kind of again promoted me to chairman. But he remained on the committee, and believe me, what we got into kind of pushed the limits of what the KTDF is all about. But we had significant influence in how racing is conducted in Kentucky. And our goal has always been, and his goal, and I will keep it up as best I can without him, is to make Kentucky, you can hold your ears, Steve, is make Kentucky the preeminent racing circuit in America. And I think we're well on the way, and with Dave pushing me and some others, because we do need to replace him, we'll get that accomplished, or we're going to give it one hell of a go getting there.
Well, and you know, the way you describe his drawing you into the you know, service roles. I mean, there are always people like a Dr. Richardson, who, you know, put their arm around friends and you know, guide you into those kinds of roles, if they think that you've got, you know, if you've got something important to contribute. And you know, in this current era and under the landscape that we're all we're all dealing with in the game. And what makes this so difficult, Bill, is that good stewards of the sport are vitally important. And I've repeated this constantly about everyone in whatever capacity they're involved needs to remember that, you know, we all, you know, share in the game, and during our time involved in it, we all have to be good stewards. And the breadth of his stewardship around the game is what it is, you know, just titanic.
Well, I'm a Rotarian, which is my downfall. My motto is service before self, and if that
right.
didn't,
yep.
if that didn't speak to David, nothing did, because he would identify. He and I would often identify the people that reverse that, and I've got to live like Santa Claus. I got a list, and I'm checking it twice. We kind of identified the people like that.
Well put. Bill, I'm sure there's going to be scholarship, memorial scholarships, and untold tributes that will be established in Dave's memory, and whatever I can do, whatever we can do here to pass them along and to, you know, to have his legacy be appropriately.
Well, the only thing I've learned this morning is there will be a very, very private family ceremony, and in October, I believe they're shooting for a celebration at Churchill Downs, just like they did for Buck Wheat and Donnie Richardson and John Asher.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
his crowd will run with all those put together.
Exactly. Exactly right. Bill, thank you for doing this.
Thank you. I think it helps.
I hope so. I hope it helped for everybody. Okay. Bill Landis of Hermitage Farm, himself widely recognized, a past recipient of the Farm Managers Club Manager of the Year, and in a lot of ways, Dave's equal in his capacities. Top of the hour is approaching. Let's take this break. Good natural time to step away. And we come back. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Horse racing fans, major Southern California thoroughbred racing action returns to...